Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here for the 22nd of January. We are well into winter, and boy, there is a lot of winter around our country these days. Lots of snow on the East Coast. It's coming through the Midwest. Even here in Minnesota, where we've had very little snow, we've got a couple inches coming today, and it kind of whitens everything up and takes some of the brown out of the roads and out of the trees and makes things beautiful, at least for a few days. I'm your host for the show here on Faith Radio Mornings, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and joined in studio by Paul Perot and Rachel Sutton, who do such a great job producing the show every morning, where we talk about the news headlines from the topic of our Christian perspective, fixing our eyes on Jesus together. And Paul and Rachel, a little bit of a different morning this morning, and been the host of the show for about 7 months now or so, and have absolutely enjoyed my time as the host of Faith Radio Mornings. But it became pretty clear to me a couple of months ago that it was a lot to navigate a morning radio show, as much as I love it, when I've got five kids at home, as well as a business and teaching a full-time load at a local university. And so we made the decision to move out of the host chair. Paul, you're shaking your head. 31st of January is my last day in the chair.
We coach them up, and what do they do?
Yeah, well, you know, we're spreading our wings. We're flying here, Paul. No, there's nothing that sad about the transition, other than I'll really miss you guys, and I'll miss the show. I'm certainly going to stay part of the Faith Radio Network as the backup host for the different shows that we have, including Connecting Faith and Afternoons with Bill Arnold, maybe do some podcasting as well. But yeah. 31st of January, last day in the chair, and I've just loved my time with you, Rachel. Love my time with you, Paul. Rachel, you've done such a great job here each morning, and it's just fun to come into studio like this.
Hey, thanks. It's been really fun to have you, but we're also really excited for the next steps and just to see kind of how God turns the ship here as we move in a different direction.
Yeah, exciting announcements about who's coming and some of the transitions and some different names as well. And we'll announce that when we're ready to. I know there's been some internal decisions that way, but we'll say things publicly, I'm sure, over the next couple of days. Yeah. But Paul, just again, really fun to be with you, kind of laugh and chat through the news each morning. I mean, it's often very serious and we need to take it seriously. But boy, sometimes I just shake my head at what's out in the news and how we can deal with it from a Christian perspective.
Yeah, but you've done a great job of navigating a lot of those topics. The comments back from a lot of our key guests is like, wow. I mean, they've appreciated you, your depth of insight and your questions, and you've done a great job. So joking aside, I mean, I'm going to miss you here. But wow, you did a great job.
I appreciate that, Paul. And you're not rid of me that easily.
You're still going to be in and out of the doors here and such. So I'll still be able to poke fun at you and, you know.
Absolutely.
That love language you have of sarcasm.
That is my love language. Again, when somebody writes that second book, that'll certainly be one of them. Well, Tommy Binion is one of those guests that you reference. He joins us regularly here on Tuesday mornings on Faith Radio Mornings to talk about the headlines out of Washington, D.C. I love having Tommy in the program, and we're going to take a short break and bring him in next. We're going to talk a little bit about the ongoing dispute in the government shutdown and how the President Trump seemed to offer some negotiations and some strategy over the weekend, and the Democrats just roundly shut him down. And we'll try to figure out what some next steps might be here for our country, and can we resolve the impasse? So welcome, everybody, to Faith Radio Mornings.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey.
It's about 9 minutes past the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings for the 22nd of January. And it's Tuesday morning. It means that one of our favorites, Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation, joins us. And Tommy works specifically with the executive branch out of Washington, D.C. and some matters of policy. Love having him on to give us some insider insight into what's going on in Washington. Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning. Great to be with you. And I heard your announcement there, and I wanted to join the others in saying how I think you do a fantastic job, and you'll sure be missed.
No, thanks, Tommy. And I certainly will miss you. I'll miss the listeners as well. It's just so fun to get up and have these conversations with you. And curious, are you snowed in again in Washington, D.C.? I know last we chatted, you were snowed in, but it seems like we keep blowing a bunch of snow your direction.
We did not get any snow. We got like the bottom of the storm and the frigid temperatures. I'm looking at the thermometer right now, it's 12 degrees, and it was about 12 degrees all day yesterday. So we're cold, and we've got, but we didn't get any snow over the weekend.
Well, that's good to hear. I know that there's another one brewing over the Rockies, so we'll keep seeing what this weird snow season has to do. Well, I know that it's also a little frozen between the Democrats and the Republicans in Washington, D.C. as well. They just can't seem to thaw out any kind of agreement between the two of them. I thought it was interesting that the president took to, again, sort of mass TV to at least allow the general public to understand his strategy and what he sees in terms of offering the Democrats a bit of a carrot. But there was it was roundly shut down over the weekend, wasn't it, Tommy?
Yeah, it absolutely was, and I gotta say that is more related to strategy and politics than it is policy. I'm quite certain that the Democrats would have taken that deal and ran with it a year ago. They have dug themselves into a hole that I think it's hard to get out of. And what I mean by that is they've declared the wall is immoral, and once it's a question of immorality, it's way harder to compromise on it. You can compromise on, well, do we spend $10 billion or $5 billion? And you can compromise on, you know, does it go just in Texas or does it go to Arizona? You can compromise on those logistical things. You can't compromise on areas of morality. So the debate really shifted, what was that, 6 weeks ago, when Nancy Pelosi declared that the wall was immoral. And I'm not sure that there's a way out of it for them without a shocking bit of compromise in this weekend's episode, where the president went straight to camera, explained what he was offering, and before he was even on TV, they had rejected it. I'm not sure there is anything he could offer them that they would take at this point, and therefore I've got no idea how the shutdown ends.
Yeah, it really does seem to be such a crazy impasse where they're so far apart. And like you said, and mentioned it well, Tommy, when it became a matter of morality and not just policy, then it's pretty tough to all of a sudden turn tail, because then all of a sudden you can say that, well, the Democrats are immoral if they'd agree to anything at all. And yet when we look in their past, Tommy, so many of these same Democrats have been in favor of a wall before. And so it's just a crazy situation.
Absolutely. The president's campaign promise, the Democrats' treatment of President Trump, and then this shutdown have really made the wall into something bigger than a public policy issue, right? It's a tactic to secure the border. It's one that makes total sense. It's the same one that we all use to secure our houses. It's really the only one you can use to secure anything. Is a physical structure, and it has become something totally different. And I think those of us that are in it sort of forget it. But if you're just listening to this news from Minnesota, let's say, it just is going to seem, I think, really out of step with reality. If they want to secure the border, they can with a wall. I think the Democrats' position is going to stop making sense, or has already stopped making sense to the vast majority of Americans. But so does a government shutdown not make sense, right? And clearly, the president has precipitated this. So, both sides can read what they want in public opinion, and I think both sides have reason to worry, and both sides have reason to stay hunkered down.
And, Tommy, we had a gentleman on the program last week, Pastor Tony Suarez, who serves as the executive vice president of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference. And Tony said he felt like it was pretty easy. Just go ahead and allow for all of the people who have come in an illegal, undocumented way that are in the country, that they would just be granted amnesty and a pathway to citizenship in return for the president getting the wall. Is it really that simple? Or is it, I mean, to your point that you said, could the president offer anything at all that would satisfy the other side?
Yeah, I really don't think the president could offer anything at all that would satisfy them. If the wall is really a question of whether or not our country is a moral state, then they're not going to agree to that. But on the amnesty question, I hope the president doesn't offer it. And here's why. That will cause the pressure on the border to go up, right? If there is amnesty on the table, if you can come here and come across the southern border in an illegal way and at some point in the future be granted citizenship in this great nation, then our hope of securing the border, I think, would be long gone. It is, after all, the amnesties of the past, including DACA, which President Obama put into place, that has acted as a magnet for illegal immigrants to come here. So I think that's a compromise that pulls the country in two different directions, one towards securing the border and one towards amnesty. If you grant amnesty to everybody, 11 million people, and create that size of a magnet to everybody else around the world, $5.7 billion has no hope at securing our southern border. So if the government shutdown gets to that stage, I'd be really worried about the direction of the policy debate.
Yeah, it's really hard to say, and you've outlined it so well, how we're going to come to a resolution in this impasse. And I'm certainly that we'll be talking about it for weeks to come here in terms of what's going to happen. And certainly the political pressure on both sides is probably going to be ratcheted up as people lose another paycheck this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the interesting bits about the episode with the grounded plane that some House members were going to take on a delegation this weekend. If they had left the country, if Speaker Pelosi had left the country, then at that point it would have guaranteed that the next round of paychecks go out. So it just sort of shows that the lack of negotiation is really directly to blame for the amount of pain that's being caused. You know, I live here in the Washington, D.C. area, and I got to say, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of workers not getting a paycheck. That is a real effect. That's a huge deal. That's the longer this goes, the more serious it becomes. The more dire, I think, you know, probably every day, new families, their situation gets more and more dire. It's really concerning for a city so dependent on that economy.
Yeah, certainly there's so many of us in the country that I know the statistics bear out are living paycheck to paycheck. And so missing one maybe is navigable. Missing two gets really, really tricky. And if it's no shutdown end in sight, it's going to be really interesting and difficult moving forward for so many. That's the voice of Tommy Binion, one of our favorites here on Faith Radio Mornings from the Heritage Foundation. And Tommy, we'll take a short break, come back, we'll change the topic and some interesting news coming out of a situation in which BuzzFeed, a news site in our country, suggested that Donald Trump directed his former attorney Michael Cohen to lie in his testimony before Congress. And we heard Robert Mueller breaking the silence as a result of that and debunking that article. So I want to get your perspective on that next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're chatting with Tommy Binion out of Washington, D.C. He's part of the Heritage Foundation and does such a great job giving us some insight on what's happening in the executive branch in that town in our nation's capital. And, of course, Tommy, we saw over the weekend as well that Robert Mueller has broken his silence. And it was a little unusual how and why that happened. But there's a news report from BuzzFeed that shockingly might have been, well, let's just say less than accurate related to what the president had done that was seen as maybe an impeachable offense. And Mueller didn't waste a lot of time coming out and saying, no, that's actually not true. Kind of remind our listeners what happened and your perspective on this.
Yeah, well, so Friday morning or overnight the night before, a BuzzFeed article broke that was explosive. And it was, you know, it was much longer than a normal news story, you know, 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 words about the president's dealings as a candidate with the Russian government and the potential project, Trump Tower in Moscow, and, you know, that was involved in potential collusion with the Russians, that there was, you know, it insinuated all types of quid pro quos. Of course, the personalities involved in the story BuzzFeed was telling are the same personalities that were involved in campaign activity. And the most interesting thing to me that happened was everybody in the world had an opinion on the BuzzFeed story Friday morning. Everybody. and it was instant. There was no corroboration by other news sources. There was no sort of indication that this report was accurate, but everybody ran with it as if it was. And that, I think, says something instructive about our news media culture that we have right now. Once there is a report out there, if it's trending on Twitter, it's true, and you comment on it. And that, to me, is problematic. I think that may be one of the things that Mueller was reacting to. He, of course, came out and said in a unique, this has never happened before, statement that the BuzzFeed story was inaccurate. And so it's now settled down. But two things that I'm concerned. One is everybody reacts to the story as if it's true. And the second thing is Mueller is now the end-all be-all in terms of what truly happened in the campaign. I'm not sure that's healthy either. As a nation, if we're just going to depend on the Mueller investigation and take it as gospel truth, that whatever opinion the report suggests is accurate, I think we have also set ourselves up for failure. Of course, democracy is built on independent thought and our own best judgment as American citizens. And I think outsourcing that to this one investigation, which is clearly biased and partisan, is troublesome as well.
Yeah, and do we see that there's going to be some actual conclusions drawn from this long-term investigation, Tommy? And when that happens, I'm guessing that both sides are going to be lining up either to support or to debunk whatever the conclusions are.
Yeah, I don't know what it will be. The term that's being thrown around now is a report. Of course, many investigations end in a report. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. I'm not sure that it would be accurate to call it a report. At this point, I'm thinking of it as an opinion, the Mueller opinion. And you're right, both sides will be lining up to either confirm or debunk it. But I'm worried that our treatment of the Mueller investigation so far means that we'll accept it as fact, and I'm not sure we should do that. You know, we're talking about events that took place 2 and 3 years ago. We're talking about a highly charged partisan environment. I just think that we need to slow down and make sure we get this right. And what happened on Friday with this BuzzFeed article, that worries me, because if we do that with a BuzzFeed article, then what are we going to do with the Mueller report? Are we going to schedule an impeachment vote the afternoon it comes out? It's very concerning, and nobody knows, by the way, when the thing will conclude and exactly how it will conclude. And so there's a little bit of an expectation happening there as well. So that's where we are.
Yeah, certainly. I know one of the frustrating things from the outside looking in, as I've done this show over these past 7 months, Tommy, is the idea that it seems like the responses have already been developed before any news even breaks. And so you see that responses from one side or the other are usually maybe set forth publicly within about 15, 20 seconds. There's been no evaluation, no fair critical analysis. It's already been decided before anything comes out.
That's right. And then the diversity of opinion is going away as well, right? Within the two parties, people used to disagree. They used to have healthy debate. They used to, something would happen and there'd be two different types of voices within each side. That seems to have gone away as well. We get one voice from the right and one voice from the left. And that is robbing us, I think, of something important, which is critical analysis and our own independent judgment. It has to do, I think, with the lightning speed of Twitter, and it has to do with the lightning speed of the news cycle and the oversaturation. But there's a real downside to it as well.
Speaking with Tommy Binion this morning from Heritage Foundation about some of the different headlines coming out of Washington, D.C. And Tommy, we have a couple minutes left, and I want to make sure I get to this, given that it was Martin Luther King Jr. Day yesterday. And the president of Heritage, where you are, has some pretty interesting suggestions for how we can help end racism. Give us a couple bits of that information.
Yeah, so Mrs. James really likes what Senator Lankford and Senator Scott. So Lankford is from Oklahoma. Senator Scott is from South Carolina. And they get together on Sundays. I think it's Solution Sunday, and they host a forum where two races or multiple races can talk to each other. And the idea that you're referring to is an op-ed that everybody should go read. It's wonderful. It's by Mrs. James, Kay Coles James. She's an African-American woman. She's the president of the Heritage Foundation. She's got this op-ed on the Daily Signal that talks about solutions for – and she says right up front in the op-ed, racism still exists in this country, and that she thinks the two races need to spend more time together talking to each other about tough issues. That makes all the sense in the world to me. I think she's basically wanting to bridge the gap and take the wall of separation apart. The more time races spend insulated with one another and the less time they spend talking to another, that the more problematic. And she's embracing solutions that involve just simple conversation. I think those of us hearing about this, listening to this, can relate that whether or not it has to do with race, anytime we've had a disagreement with any individual, one of the things that heals it is FaceTime. And that's been true in my life. I think it's been true in most people's lives. And she's pointing that out as a solution to racism that still exists today on Martin Luther King Day.
I think it's really wise there, Tommy. There's a sense in which we can dehumanize one another pretty quickly if our only medium of communication is through social media and other sorts of electronic channels. We get face-to-face with people, humanize the situation. We may still disagree, but it takes some of the vitriol out of it. I really appreciate the way you join us here on Tuesday mornings. Really look forward to the time to just get some insider news out of Washington, D.C. I'll do the best I can here in Minnesota, Tommy, to put up a wall of just to prevent the snow from heading your direction again.
You know what? Many believe that you can affect the weather if you could just run your car a little more or a little less so that the storms miss us. That would be great.
I will do everything I can. Thanks for joining us, Tommy. Look forward to chatting again next week.
Bye.
Take a break here. First, a little lighten up, a little laughter this morning as we get started on the show on Faith Radio Mornings, some bottom of the hour news. And when we come back for the second half of this hour, I'll be joined by Karen Ellis, who's part of Reformed Theological Seminary. And Karen and I are going to talk a little bit about some of the developments out of the World Watch List released by the ministry Open Doors and what we can see with persecuted Christians around the world. Well, certainly one of the more significant impacts we've seen in the ongoing government shutdown has to do with security at airports. And security at Minneapolis-St. Paul National Airport is one of the longest in the country. The lines there have an average wait time of about 41 minutes right now, and that is way up from the typical wait for a non-peak day at less than 10 minutes. The security officers are working without pay during a partial government shutdown, and unscheduled absences are increasing. So if you're traveling anytime soon, make sure you give yourself plenty of time to get through security.
When it comes to what the Bible teaches, you have two choices. Embrace what it says or rationalize it away. This is Jim Garlow. It's what we do, isn't it? We embrace what the Bible teaches or we rationalize it, ignore it, hoping it'll go away. But what I'm advocating is standing up and fighting for what you believe. Admittedly, you have to pick your battles. Some things just aren't worth defending. But your faith, your family, your freedoms, they are worth defending. When what God has ordained and established is diminished, when you're being forced to compromise, stand up. Government-funded abortions, injustice, misinformation, lies. When I speak of truth and justice, it's not based on your definition or on mine. It's a definition that has to be based on God and His Word. Be well-versed in what the Word actually says at jimgarlow.com.
Two minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined at this time by Karen Ellis, who works at the Reformed Theological Seminary. She's director for the study of Bible and ethnicity. It's a center there. And good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Peter. How are you this morning?
Doing well. Great to have you back on the show. Certainly enjoy our conversations. And I know it sounds like you've got a new gig, so tell me about it.
I do. The Center for the Study of the Bible and Ethnicity, something that I should have seen coming but didn't see coming when God manifests something that's on your heart. He does it in ways that you just don't imagine possible. So we call it the CSBE for short, and that probably will make our conversation a lot easier. We could probably save like 5 minutes by not saying Center for the Study of the Bible and Ethnicity. But, yeah, the CSBE is a place for everyone who attends Reformed Theological Seminary in Atlanta or is in the community and wants to study non-Western biblical voices alongside traditional Western ones. I'm hoping we can all gain maybe a fuller, more robust understanding of what God has done and is done and wants to do in his world. And so we're looking to reclaim the biblical contributions of contemporary and historical voices who may have been forgotten or overlooked in the telling of history. There's a lot going on in the kingdom of God around the world, and we want to give people an opportunity to hear what God is doing among the nations and maybe get our eyes off of America a little bit more and understand ourselves as Christians in America rather than American Christians, you know, Christians who are passing through a place that has been ordained as has everybody's location who believes in Christ. And, you know, they're certainly intended to act in that context where they were placed by God, but also to understand that we're a part of a much larger global picture of what God is doing in and through redemptive history. So these are some of the conversations that we're hoping to bring forward as we start the center.
Karen, I think it's interesting when you mentioned that we're Christians in America like that. I know in some of my classes over the years, and it's admittedly meant to be a bit provocative and spark some conversation, but I will maybe start a class by saying, so I'm not an American. And boy, there, obviously the class gets really quiet really quickly as soon as I say that. And then I have to, of course, qualify that, and rightly so, by saying, I love our country. I love America. There's nothing anti-American about that statement. It's a great place to live, and I'm incredibly grateful for all of that. But I invite the students to try to think about what I'm suggesting there, and we eventually get to that place, as you just referenced, mm-hmm. that I'm a Christian living in America, and my allegiance doesn't change whether I'm in America or when we go to Scotland, where we've lived before, or other places. Then I'm a Christian in Scotland, mm-hmm. Christian in China. That seems to be a little bit what you're getting at, right? Our citizenship really is in heaven, as Paul would say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not that these places, you know, I believe that, okay, if you believe that God is sovereign, the way that, you know, covenantal theology, which is the lens that we look through at RTS, if you believe that God is sovereign over all things, then he's sovereign over our placement. He's so sovereign over the time in which we're born. Life for me as an African-American woman looks very different in 2018 than it would have looked at 1718, right? So my placement has significance, and my my place of origin has significance. All of these things, I believe, are actually a package of a gift from God that contribute to my identity. But, of course, my ultimate identity is in Christ. And I believe that you know, whether you're in China or India or a Christian in Pakistan, you have something to contribute to the conversation that you've learned by the place that you've by the location that God has assigned you and the people and the context. You know, he's going to work out his gospel with certain things that are his gospel in certain places and in certain communities with principles that are consistent, but the methods might change because the context may demand something different. So I think it's great to just have a place where we can assemble and learn from folks from around the globe, but also, Peter, also to learn from folks who know what it is to be a Christian minority, which is something that we're not very well versed with here in the West. And I think that we can learn a lot from them about church in the hard places, not just globally, but also domestically, you know, places where people are hostile towards the gospel because in terms of like domestic or here in the States, they're hostile, say, because if, you know, if a, say a drug dealer converts to Christianity and then the rest of the drug industry loses its you know, a portion of its income or its earning potential. Of course, people will be hostile towards Christianity. They're hostile towards anything that transforms a person away from the destructive ways of the system under which that Christianity lives. And we see that pattern, you know, throughout the world. Satan, Satan has the same way of dehumanizing people and keeping them under systems that challenge and want to suppress anything that will transform people towards them being rehumanized, being made fully human the way God intended for us to be. And so, you know, hearing from those voices, I think, is going to be really instructive in the next, you know, should the Lord tarry, in the next 20 years. And so RTS has opened up a place through this center for us to facilitate those kinds of conversations.
And it is a really important conversation that you referenced. I know, Karen, I've been teaching in theology and Bible since about the year 2002. And certainly when I started, there was not the phrase that was that is part of it now, which is the idea of contextual theology. And I would love for you to sort of enlighten our listeners on that phrase, because as the world has become more interconnected through the internet, as travel has become so much easier than it was when I was growing up, it's pretty easy to get to different places in the world comparatively. So then we run into a lot of different versions of Christianity. And so, Karen, my mind kind of exploded when I began to read theologians of the East, theologians of Africa, that they love Jesus down to their toes, and yet some of the emphases based on their context were a little bit different than Western culture.
Sure. And, you know, again, the concept of places where Christianity is a struggle, places where, you know, hope is in short supply to begin with, but you can't easily replace you're not distracted necessarily by other things that you can replace that hope with. For example, filling yourself with things that you can numb the despair that normally would drive you to look for it in Christ. That's missing for us here in our comfort. And, you know, a lot of people ask me sometimes, I do not advocate that Western Christians are under any kind of persecution whatsoever. But I do think that there is a rise in anti-Christian hostility, some of which we have contributed to. And some of it is just natural that there is always a force since the Garden. There's always a force that resents God's people and their presence on the earth and the spread of that transformation towards life and the affirmation of life. So, you know, as we experience a rise in anti-Christian hostility, the contexts of others that, you know, they can inform the pieces that we have that are missing. Just like, you know, we have pieces that others may be missing. This is why it's a body and we need to work together. I remember I was at a conference. I can't say what the conference was about. It was related to the persecuted church. And I met someone from a particular country and they were doing their own indigenous theology out of their context that was rising from their understanding of how God had worked in their people through the Bible and the places where they were seeing him move today. And I said, wow, that must be so great to be creating your own indigenous theology. And, you know, you don't need anything from the West. And it was a pretty well-respected scholar. And he looked at me and he said, we need it all. He said, if it's true, we need it all. And there are some things that have been added that are not, you know, they're outside of the pale of orthodoxy. He said, but the body needs all of the thoughts and all of the approaches and all of the theologies that come from these, that arise from these different contexts. That's why it's a body. No one region, no one tradition necessarily. We all see through a glass darkly at this point, right? We will only know everything when we see Christ face to face. There's only one place where the whole of God is understood, and that's the Bible itself.
I love it.
Rest of us.
Yeah, keep going, Karen. Yeah, because I finished the thought because it's a great thought.
It's the only place that fully expresses the magnitude of the Word of God and the impact of it and the potential therein and the plan of salvation and for God's people, and that he's going to keep a people for himself from Genesis all the way to Revelation and beyond. But the rest of us, as we look at it through our fallen eyes, you know, we have the power of the Holy Spirit to keep us as close to the truth and as close to that story of the people of God as possible. But we still see things from a limited vision. Paul says we see through a glass darkly, but then we will see face to face. And so we need the checks and balances of the body. We need the understanding. We need the different contexts of how God is moving in all these different places.
Yeah, certainly when my advisor at the University of Edinburgh exposed me to some Asian Christian theologians who, again, love Jesus down to their toes, I was just amazed at how the emphasis of suffering that I don't see in a lot of Western Christian theologians, because there is so much of that happening. Mm-hmm. And it really helped me expand my view of the kingdom. We're talking with Karen Ellis here, who is the new director for the Center of Study of Bible and Ethnicity. And Karen, when we come back, I would love to get into the topic about the difference between ethnicity and race. Quite frankly, I'm not sure I understand the nuances of the difference, and I would love to have you illuminate me on that next here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to the show. Having an interesting conversation with Karen Ellis, who's the new director for the Center for the Study of the Bible and Ethnicity at Reformed Theological Seminary. And Karen, do I understand correctly that you are soon to be Dr. Karen Ellis?
Well, soon is a relative term.
Yeah, I understand, Karen. I managed to cram my four-year program into about 8 years.
You've done your own doctoral work, so you know how that goes. But let's say that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and we just hope that there isn't a train attached to it.
Well, I know, Karen, when I finished my first 330-page document and turned it in and thought that was the light at the end of the tunnel, and I got struck by the train when my advisor laughed me out of the room and said, yeah, you're going to have to rewrite this entire thing. So an extra 2 years was added to my term. It was wonderful.
It's not a process for the faint of heart, I'll tell you that.
That is for sure. Well, interesting conversation for sure having this morning. I know I appreciate just getting the contextual view of our faith from around the world and people who do love Jesus down to their toes. And as part of that, Karen, so many conversations have come up the last 10 years or so around race and ethnicity and contextual theology. And I would love for you to help me understand some of the differences between race and ethnicity, because I find myself too often using those terms as synonyms, and I know they're not.
It's interesting when the center was first announced. You know, the title is strategic, and the center was first announced. The Center for the Study of the Bible, so that has primacy for us, right?
Yep.
And ethnicity, and a lot of people will hear the Center for the Study of the Bible and race, and that's not what we're doing here. And let me just make a distinction between the two. It's really quickly, and this is a major oversimplification, but ethnicity is based on a group of people and like an ethnic group that's normally based on similar traits like common language, common heritage, cultural similarities within that group. Race is related, and it has a similar meaning, but it's described, I think, more through physical traits as opposed to cultural traits of ethnicity. And race is the place where you know, in American history in Western history, it's largely been exploited as a tool to oppress people and keep people apart. Certainly in the 20th century, but a tool of oppression for very, very long time. So it has a very negative connotation. There are people who've had to who've tried to in the past sort of redeem the concept of, I appreciate the place we spoke earlier where God has placed me. I appreciate how he's created me, that he's placed me in a particular people group. And we express that often through the word race here in the States. What we are focusing on at the center is more on ethnicity, which is actually a term found in the Bible. And you'll find that throughout, that Revelation 7:9 caps it off. He says, after this, I looked and behold a great multitude that no one could number from every nation, from all tribes and people and languages, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed in white robes with palm branches in their hands. And they go on to describe this great multitude from every nation. And so these kinds of distinctions are important when you're talking about a global reality and also the concept of a people that God is keeping for himself that is actually its own culture. with its own language and its own history and its own future, of this great ingathering of people made up of people from everywhere. You know, it's the promise of Abraham, you know, your descendants will be as great as the sands on the seashore. It's that promise fulfilled. And so this is why we use that language specifically with the center, with the CSBE. We want to emphasize the fact that this is the picture we're looking at, not necessarily as people. There are plenty of places having important discussions right now about race, particularly as it pertains to the United States and our history. And those are important, and there's a place for that. But what we're trying to capture is a different conversation that has been running as an undercurrent underneath, like you were talking about, the last 10 years. This conversation has been running as an undercurrent, and we want to give people a place to kind of tease out some of the ideas that we're just establishing a place for people to continue a conversation that's been happening already. We're not creating a conversation. We're just trying to step in the stream and find out what's of value and what can be brought to bear on the kingdom of God and on life here as we're passing through.
Well, Karen, we love the work that you're doing there. Love that you are staying anchored to the biblical text in this conversation. It isn't just some sociological exploration. We're really part of a much bigger eternal story. So thanks for taking the time you did this morning to help us understand so many of the ways in which our world is coming together in these places of faith. Have a great week ahead.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a break here and wrap up our first hour of the show and preview what's coming up next with Dr. David Stevens at the top of hour two here on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, soon to be Dr. Karen Ellis sure took us deep into some of the conversations of global Christianity, and really appreciate people like her doing work that can really bring racial reconciliation from a biblical standpoint as we learn to listen to one another. Well, looking forward to hour two coming up here next. I'm going to talk with Dr. David Stevens, one of our favorites here in Faith Radio Mornings, about some of the updates about abortion laws and some of the millennial response to that.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.